And in that moment, everyone I've ever done that with goes, oh, I'm like, yeah, that, you're back. Hi, nice to see you. You're not in your head anymore. Just for a minute, you dropped into your body. You dropped out of, I'm just running the world in my brain, back into, oh, okay, here we are.
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces. I also bring you ideas and techniques that you can grab and use to set goals, create, and unlock your potential for changing yourself and the world. And now let's get to the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super, super excited that you're here and taking the time to listen to the show. And I'm also really excited, and you will understand why in a second, to have my guest of the week on the show. It's because Bill and I do something very, very similar. So I'm so excited to dig into how he does what he does. Bill Small is the owner of Artist Mind, and for over 20 years, he's been helping people become the best version of themselves. Bill draws on his experience as a musician, entrepreneur, business coach, and co-host of The Subtle Art of Yelling. I love that. In 2016, Bill created Artist Mind Inc. to make coaching available to small business owners. In 2018, he was asked to join the consulting team at VIP Medical Consultants and became a partner in healthcare startup Advanced Clinical Management. Taking a break from touring and live music performance during the 2020 pandemic shutdown, like we all did, Bill created and launched the Awareness Advantage Workshop, a group training course in mindfulness. In 2021, it's back to performing and launching the new podcast, The Subtle Art of Not Yelling, with co-host Miles Hansen. Wow, Bill, I'm so happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Well, you really made it sound like I'm doing a lot of things. I didn't realize I was doing them.
Yeah, I think that's the thing about people like you. You are constantly on the go, constantly busy, constantly doing things, and then go, wow, I haven't accomplished anything today. What's going on?
Oh, get out of my head.
I've got your number. Absolutely. So I am super grateful and thankful that you are here, because you and I do something very, very similar. We take the mindset of a musician and really extrapolate it to everything, right? I, for example, have a workshop called Work in Harmony, where I go into companies and organizations and I teach them all how to work together in song. And there's a certain mindset that happens, right? There's a mindset that you have to have. There's a mindset that you're trying to get them to have as far as opening themselves up. And I would love it if you would talk a little bit. I immediately jump in, because I'm going to get to how you got here and all of that in a second. But I would love it if you would talk a little bit about, what is that creative mindset of musicians? Like, what is it that musicians have that can teach other people to find that spark of inspiration, that spark of brilliance inside themselves?
Well, you know, there's two things that come to mind just straight off the bat. And I think there's probably a lot more than that. But for a little while during the pandemic, at least during the lockdown part, I discovered Clubhouse. And I connected with a couple of friends of mine who are also musicians. And I had this, one of them said this one day, that he'd been experiencing some anxiety. He's a drummer. And one day he was kind of freaking out. So he just walked away from the work he was doing and pulled out his practice pad and started doing what's called rudiments. So that's all the basics that a drummer needs to be really, you know, good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And he chilled right out. He did that for 10 minutes and it was like a meditation. Mm. And I thought, rudiments, wait a minute. We can take rudiments into everything we do. If you have a meditation practice, that's a rudiment. If you do something that builds your skills, or you read, or you have, or you exercise, or whatever it is that you're doing consistently to make you better, is like a rudiment. And then I also thought about improvisation. 'Cause as you know, the best laid plans, right?
Always.
Yeah. And it's great to have a plan. It's great to start. If you're going to play a song, I'm going to get up on stage. And yeah, I know there's a plan for that song. There's an intro. There's a verse and a chorus and a bridge and a verse and a chorus. But at the same time, I want to be flexible enough to be able to improvise, to be able to flex and move and pivot and change and go wherever I need to. And I think that's something that can be really difficult for people sometimes to bring into their business and their lives.
I feel like I'm going to just be going yes, 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 yes to everything you say. Yeah, absolutely. I concur wholeheartedly. And yet I had jazz aficionado John Cale on the show, and he talks a lot about improv, and especially through the eyes of the piano and through the lens of jazz, especially jazz improvisation. And there's a staying loose quality that he talks about, and I would love it. I would love it if you would take me through how you've stayed loose, how you stay loose in the work that you're doing, but also making that transition back and forth between touring musician and business coach, because that takes some mental gymnastics, I would imagine.
You know, it doesn't.
Okay.
And here's why. It is about staying loose. And I'm going to put that in a different framework and call it being present. The best thing I can do on stage is just actually be there and not be thinking about anything else, not be worrying about anything else. There's often, this is really fresh for me. I had a friend yesterday who canceled a gig, and they called me and said, "Hey, can you fill in?" So I went kind of last minute and I played last night, and there were some technical difficulties somewhere in there, and I noticed that it was throwing me off a little bit. I was starting to listen to the thoughts in my head instead of just really allowing myself to be in the moment of singing and playing.
Mm-hmm.
And all there was for me to do was get back to that. And there's no difference when I'm on a podcast with you, or when I'm speaking with a client, or hopefully when I'm with my kid, though that can be more difficult sometimes. The idea is to stay loose, to be present, to be in the moment, and not get pulled away by the incessant chattering in my head. It's going to be there. There's nothing I can do about it, but I don't have to jump on its back and ride around the room.
I love that you said that. It's funny. I say to my own clients, think about what you're doing, not what you're going to be doing. And that's so important, especially in music. And yet, here's the thing. Like, I've been on stage myself and have forgotten the words to the song I'm about to sing, literally a song I wrote, right? So I the thing that I do is I go, "Oh, you'd think that because I wrote the song that I'd know the words to the song, but it turns out I don't." And invite the audience to come with me, right? To be there in that space and just go, we're all in this together. When you're in that space, you started listening to the chatter in your brain, listening to the tech problems. When you're in that space and you get back to mindfulness, do you have a specific immediate practice that you go into when you're up on stage in front of 500 people? Or is there something else that you sort of rely on to get back to that present state?
I do. And as a matter of fact, last night I did forget the words to a song that I not only wrote, but I've played countless times and played in that room in front of some of those people countless times.
Right, right.
And I just made some other stuff up.
Nice.
Stuck it in there. It was fine. I don't even know if anybody noticed.
Only the people who really know the song, right?
Yeah. I feel like I'm fortunate in that when I went to music school the first time, I was a voice major.
Mm-hmm.
And singing is all about breathing. If you're not breathing, it's going to be really hard to sing. So
impossible to sing, really. Yeah.
Pretty much. I didn't fully connect that at the time with meditation and mindfulness, though it didn't take long. And what I do is I go immediately back to, how am I breathing?
Mm-hmm.
And I focus my attention on what the appropriate breathing for me and my body when I'm singing is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm back just like that. Not to mention that then my voice works better and it's easier for me to just drop back into the flow.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, at that point, the whole vocal apparatus is a lot more relaxed. The muscles aren't straining or tense around it. And you've got your diaphragm going. All of that stuff is working in the moment, which I think is great if you've got a practice. But when you're working with, let's say, an organization or a company, and you're trying to get them to embrace that practice of like, hey, let's be mindful together, sometimes people get anxiety around that. Now, I know once you breathe, you'll be less anxious. But what when you work with people to coach them as a person to person or going to a company, and you're working with them in that way, how do you get people who are otherwise probably anxious or really type A personalities to kind of step back and stop? What is your secret, Bill? Tell me what the secret is there, because it is something that a lot of people, once they embrace it, love. And it can be really difficult to get someone who's like, no, I'm too busy. I have to go do this instead of breathing, to get them to stop and breathe.
Yeah, I think some of it is like anything else. You have to experience something.
Mm.
And the great thing about this is, especially if somebody's all wound up, if I can get them to come with me for 30 seconds, all I have to do is say, okay, do me a favor. Are you sitting or standing? And they'll say, sitting. Great. Put your feet flat on the floor. Sit up straight just for a second. Now just take one really deep breath. And they'll do it. I'll say, all right, when you breathe out, just close your eyes just for a second. You can open them right back up again. Just close your eyes and breathe out. Now take one more breath and just notice where your feet are and notice where your hands are. And then open your eyes. And in that moment, everyone I've ever done that with goes, oh, I'm like, yeah, that, you're back. Hi. Nice to see you. You're not in your head anymore. Just for a minute, you dropped into your body. You dropped out of, I'm just running the world in my brain, back into, oh, okay, here we are.
I love that so much. Yeah, that moment of being back and being back in the present it's transformative for people for sure. And when you're working with an individual person, they want to be there, right? Presumably. Yeah. They want to. But when you're working with a company, there might be people who are not ready to buy into that, who are like, no, I'm going to go get busy. Like, for example, when I go into a company, a lot of times sort of the employees will be there, but the upper level management are like, no, this is for the employees. This isn't for me. And often the upper level management people are the ones who need it the most, right? So how do you do that? How do you get buy-in from those top level people who really need the work that you're going to do with them?
Well, I can tell you this. I won't go into a company that I haven't worked with the top level people.
Okay.
Because bottom up training and coaching doesn't work.
Mm.
It just doesn't. I mean, if you're going through any kind of coaching program in an employee setting and your boss hasn't done the same thing, first of all, there's a language disconnect. How is he going to then lead you if he doesn't have the language that you're learning? And it's just like me as a coach. I have a coach. Sometimes I have more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And why would I not? If I'm going to ask you to pay me to coach you, why wouldn't I be willing to do the same thing? I have to walk the walk. And leaders who don't walk the walk, who aren't willing to be coachable, why should they expect their employees to be coachable?
That's an excellent point. And it's also, to me, like it's an investment, right? You're asking the leader and the decision maker, we'll call them the decision maker. The leader isn't always the decision maker. You're asking the decision maker to be to be coachable, to make an investment in themselves and in the company, in the organization. And yet this is something that's interesting. And I've had the same issue. People look at it through the lens of music and they go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Or they get terrified. What do you mean singing in music? What? No, you know, because it is something that is, it's kind of like stand-up comedy to me. It's a piece of your soul that you're sharing with people, something that you think is worth sharing. And so when they're afraid, when you see people who have that resistance, as Stephen Pressfield says, what do you do to help them work through it? Is it still always, hey, let's get back into the breath? Or is there something else that you can bring as a musician that people can learn from?
I think there's a couple of things. One, you talked about buy-in a couple of times, and I think this is part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Buy-in comes because, I mean, let's face it, when you're coaching somebody, the only reason you're doing it is because there's a gap. They're wherever they are and they want to be somewhere else. There's something they want, there's something they're after, and they can't seem to get there.
Mm.
So there's a gap. And the whole idea is coach them through the gap. Until you have that or until they see that, it's really difficult to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the gap, being afraid of maybe moving forward or trying something new or what have you. If you go to my website, the first thing that you will see is the only thing that ever gets in your way is you.
Mm.
And while it can feel a little uncomfortable, one of the first places that I go with all my clients is how do you get in your way? It can be uncomfortable to look at, but until you're willing to look at that, you're not going to move past where you are. You're just not. And if you really want to, then you'll look.
I'm taking all that in for a second. I don't call it dead air. I call it anticipatory air when I do this because it is something that is so important to realize that you have to sort of be, again, present, but also be ready to see some things that you might not be interested in seeing about yourself, right? You have to be willing to see some of the things that are challenges for you that you need to work on. And to me, you know, when I help people get creative through music and singing and playing drums and whatever else we do, they end up having an amazing time, but they may not realize the benefits of what we've just done until way later, right?
Yeah.
So there has to be sort of again, that long-term thinking. And when you're doing this, you said in your website, that it is, you know, the only thing that gets in your way is you. You're asking for some deep work from people when you're, is it, I'm going to be coming back for the next 6 months? Is it, I'm available to you for the next 42 years? How do you, you know, because it's an important thing, right? If you do it once, it's like, I don't have children. I'm the aunt who riles them up and hands them back, right? So,
right. That's nice.
I love doing it, but I've more than once, both my sisters have been like, really? Right. Because I do, I'll rile them up. I'll get them all excited. And then I'm like, well, I'm time to get on the plane. I'm out of here. And the thing is that notion of, well, we've started this thing and now I'm leaving. Right. So what do you provide your clients? How would they, the small business owners, individual clients, what do they need to get from you and what do they get from you that will help them in that growth that is going to be more long-term rather than like we did it to our workshop and now what do we do?
Yeah, primarily I work one-on-one with people and mm-hmm. I require a 6-month initial commitment.
Okay.
Because it's really hard to move the needle on a human being in less than 6 months. And you can have, you know, people can have great aha moments and true transformation in a workshop. I've done it. I've been there. I've been on the other side of that. But then integrating that into daily life and actually having it make lasting change generally takes a little more work. It takes a little time. What oftentimes happens, and I'm sure you've seen this, is you go into an organization and you do your workshop and it's great. And maybe it even moves the needle. But oftentimes, 3 months later, they have the same problems they had before.
Right. They're back where they started from. Yeah.
Exactly. And then they get somebody else's workshop and they try that. And they keep wondering, why doesn't this work?
Right.
They have a budget for it, so they keep doing it. Behavior change, habit change takes time. It just does. And I tend to, if I work in shorter bursts with people, we're talking about different things. And it's up to them how much of that they're going to take and implement.
And that's lovely for me to hear because, you know, when you're staying present, you might think, oh, I am transformed or I am transforming. But then old habits will creep up unless you remain somewhat vigilant, right? And so when you're doing this, your personal coach or business coach, when you're doing this work, that, you know, I feel like I'm being a billboard for you. Like, hey, you need to hire both because I would love, no, seriously, this is one of those things. Since I do something so similar to what you do, you know, you must be offering them practicums. You must be offering them supplemental materials and all of that. And so if someone were to go, Bill, I want to work with you and I'm going to sign up for 6 months. You're not going to be available every Tuesday at 10 or Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2. So there must be supplemental materials that they're going to get. And I imagine that kind of thing is something that is, again, always coming back to be present, be aware, expand your creative life and all of that. Or is it your podcast? Like, how do you support the people that you're working with for these long-term commitments?
Well, I do have regular conversations.
Okay.
With my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Take a drink of water. No problem. I can fill it. I can la, 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 la.
I tell
la,
you
la.
What. The thing about living in Texas, Central Texas, where I am in the spring, is that if you've ever been allergic to anything in your life,
oh, no.
It's all here and it's all growing and it's all in the air right now. So
oh, no.
Right now it's oak pollen. So that's why I keep.
I know. Anyway. I understand. Yeah, I get it. You poor thing.
Ooh, okay. So I have regular conversations with all of my clients. Sometimes it's twice a month. Sometimes it's more than that. They have access to me anytime if they need it, though people don't always take me up on that. And rather than providing them with a bunch of stuff, it's more about having them create, and I help with this, of course, consistent practices that support them and that act both as pattern interrupters to their old habits and begin to create new habits and make the space for new habits and new ways of thinking that will have them move past wherever they're stuck.
Mm. Yeah, I love that notion. Again, you and I do something so very similar. It is interesting to me that when we're in that creative mind, or that creative mind. It's funny, this podcast is called The Innovative Mindset. It was originally called The Creative Mindset and it has transformed. And it was literally called The Creative Mindset Podcast because that notion of staying open to inspiration and putting it to use, like having the confidence to put it to use, is very important to me. And I think it's important for when people are doing this work. So if you're there and you're talking with them and you're essentially asking them to sort of get into that artistic or creative mindset, a lot of people have resistance. So when they're building these pattern interrupters, as you called it, and new behaviors, new habits, there, I imagine, is a bunch of fear that happens. And I can tell from my own clients, there's a bunch of fear that happens and a bunch of resistance. What kind of support do they need from you? What kind of support do you give to them when they're afraid?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. I think that, you know, we're all afraid at some point, but fear is an interesting thing. You know, fear is almost strictly biological.
Mm.
You know, your brain, what's your brain's primary objective? To keep your body alive. And this is not a problem that we're faced with quite like we were when your brain first developed. And yet, it's still its primary function. And fear is one of the ways that your brain tries to keep your body alive. And so it becomes afraid of anything that's different, anything that is change. I mean, look around the world right now. If you look at all the division that we see, if you look at how we still manage to dislike for no reason or be afraid of for no reason people that are different than us, that's wired into our brain. Different, be afraid. Change, be afraid. It's not real. It's not actual. There is no saber-toothed tiger running down my street. Though there was a mountain lion in my neighborhood 2 days ago, which is a little frightening.
Wow.
Yeah. When it comes to fear, I truly believe that a mindfulness practice is one of the most beneficial things you can do, because over time you can disconnect from the fear and see it for what it is. It's no different than a few minutes ago when I talked about just taking two breaths and dropping out of your head, which by the way is the only place there's fear, into your body. And you kind of you get to take a step back from it and go, okay, wait a minute. I am experiencing fear. What am I actually afraid of?
Mm.
And most of the time when you can see what you're actually afraid of, it's difficult to stay being afraid of it, because it's nothing. It's some made up story. So part of it, you asked, how do I support people? I think, I always think of the, one of the main purposes of coaching is like my swim coach when I was a kid. The purpose that, you know, my goal was to go faster, to win a race, but I can't see myself swim. I don't know what my body's doing, really. I mean, I can feel it, but I can't see it. Mm-hmm. And the coach can walk along the side of the pool and go, hey, you're bringing your right arm too far out of the water. That's slowing you down. Or you're not kicking soon enough when you come out of your turn. You got to kick quicker. And any number of other things.
Mm-hmm. So
part of it. And that's the same as me being able to say, okay, what are you actually afraid of? Because that's a conversation you might not actually be able to have with yourself. It's easier to have that with someone else who's guiding you through it. And I think the other half of coaching a lot of times is accountability. So if, let's just say that I give a client a recommendation that they might want to create, or I say, hey, I want you to try this for 2 weeks. I want you to try a 5-minute meditation every day for 2 weeks. Mm. Only 5 minutes. That's for the busy people who say they don't have time for anything, or they can't, you know, they can't concentrate, or they can't do that. Great. Anybody, you can sit there and stare at your navel for 5 minutes. I don't care. Just do this 5-minute meditation. If I promise myself that I'm going to meditate every day for 2 weeks, yeah, right. I'm going to go about 4 days. I'm going to be tired on day 5. I'm not going to do it. And then on day 6, I'm going to go, well, I already skipped yesterday, so I've kind of screwed it up anyway. I just won't do it.
Mm.
If I promise you that I'm going to meditate every day for 2 weeks, I'm much more likely to do it, because I know I have to talk to you in 2 weeks. And I know you're going to ask me. And I don't want to look like a jerk, so I'm going to try it.
I love it. I don't want to look like a jerk, so I'm going to meditate.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, that whole notion of accountability is so powerful when you think that it is someone else who's going to be able to look at you and go, okay, how did you do? And you have to answer that question. I think it is different. I agree with you. And yet you, when you're working with your folks, when you're doing all of this stuff, you started it by looking at awareness, which is fabulous. That's my very first thing too. That's what mindfulness does, is give you awareness. And so I'd love it if you'd talk a little bit about that awareness. It's called the Awareness Advantage Workshop. Mm. I would love to hear from you what that is and how it impacts the people you work with.
That was a little detour I made because I thought it might be fun. And it's a, that course itself was based in mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is a there's a lot of that out there. I've actually been looking at maybe getting certified in it. It's one of the first, at least that I know of, kind of formal meditation-based programs that came to the States, and especially that went into business and all of that. A guy named Jon Kabat-Zinn created that. And so I just took that and tried it with a couple of groups of people. And it so relates to what I was already doing with them that it made sense. You know, for example, I've always talked to people about, you know, look, if somebody's decided to sign up as a client and they're paying me money, there's something they want. There's a the results that they're producing currently are probably not what they're looking for. They want something different. But most of the time, there's something going on in our heads that we're not aware of.
Right.
And the initial work you always have to do is opening up that awareness, becoming more aware of what's actually happening to me in this moment. And this is the only moment there is. You know, you and I could sit here and argue about whether the past actually exists, which might be a fun episode, or or we could look at the future, which obviously hasn't happened yet. So if at least the past is over and the future hasn't happened, well, what's left? The only moment that life is happening is this moment right here. You and I talking together from our little houses, on our microphones, with our headphones. This is it. There's nothing else. And when you really begin to tap into what's happening to me right now, what is my experience? What is the story going on in my head? What is going on with my body? Can I even feel my body? I don't even know. You actually begin to see why you're creating the results you're creating. And we always want to put it outside of us. It's the economy. It's the pandemic. It's my station in life. It's the weather, whatever. When you want to change something, there's only one place to look. And it's not out there.
I feel like I should just say mic drop. Yeah. Again, yes, 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 yes. Everything you just said. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It is interesting to me when we look at that space in ourselves and go, okay, I am sort of the master of my own destiny, even though there might be challenges, but there are ways to meet those challenges or whatever that is. If you can be where you are right now, it's beautiful. And there's a wonderful book that I read way long time ago called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And
yeah.
You know, if you know the book, Socrates talking to Dan and he says, "Where are you?" And Dan goes, "Here." He goes, "What time is it?" Dan says, "Now." And Socrates says, "What are you?" And Dan just goes, "This moment." And I read that and I went, "Yes, that's perfect." Yeah. Exactly it, right? And so we're shaped so much by the things we learned when we were younger. And hopefully we incorporate the thing, you know, I always say, keep the best, lose the rest. So hopefully you are incorporating as you go, as you grow, as you live your life, these things are going to help you do the work of your life and all of that. You started, I know you swam, you started in that space. You were a musician. You still are a musician, singer, songwriter, all of these different things. And I said I'd ask you about it because I'd like to know what started you down this creative, mindful, I'm literally writing a book called The Mindful Creative right now. So it's, again, I'm like, this is it. I'm talking to my twin who lives in Austin, Texas, or near Austin, Texas. So what started you on the path from swimmer, singer, musician to today with podcasts and performing and coaching? How did that happen?
Well, when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was sing, really. And I started playing instruments so that I could accompany myself.
Mm.
And kind of caught the rock and roll bug when I was a teenager and wanted to be in bands and do all that stuff, which
awesome.
I did for a really long time and still do. And, you know, we could do a whole nother episode on all the jobs I've had in music. there's been a lot of them. And in the 90s, I took a turn in my own sort of personal development journey. I'd always been interested. I went to Berklee College of Music the first time in the 80s, and I took a class on a philosophy class on Zen and Taoism.
Mm.
And our teacher had us meditating in class. And that's a practice I kept for a while. I was always interested in that and in Buddhism and various Eastern ways of thinking, at least, if not the religious part, certainly the view of life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 90s, a bunch of friends of mine were all doing the same coursework around personal development. So I did some of that and I really dug it. And I had, in the course of that, I had great coaches and I got trained to be a coach. But I didn't know that was a thing you could do, like for a job. It was just something we did inside of the work we were doing. And in 2008, I had moved around a bit. I'd been back in Boston and been in Nashville and come back to Texas, got in a band that ended up lasting for 15 years. But we put our first record out and we went running all over the place supporting that, not really getting paid a whole lot of money. And January of 2008, I was tired. I was relatively broke and I needed something to do. And I was on the phone with a friend of mine who was a filmmaker, but I knew him from this sort of personal development world as somebody who was a really kind of a powerful presence. And he said he'd gotten a job, which I couldn't believe. He's the last person in the world who I'd ever think would have a job. And I said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm coaching. And I kind of glossed over it. I was like, oh, cool, whatever. And then we got off the phone and this light bulb went off over my head. And I thought, did he just say he's coaching people and they're paying him for that? And I picked the phone back up and said, hey, did you just say you're coaching people and they're paying you for that? He said, yeah. And I said, are they hiring? And it turns out they were. And it was a company that was providing coaches for some prominent authors at the time who were in the book and the movie The Secret. And you know, they wanted to provide coaching programs for their audience and we ended up being the coaches.
Got it.
So I went from zero to, you know, managing 37 clients at a time, in about 30 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did that for, about a year and a half. And, you know, by 2009, if you remember, if any of the listeners were around back then, the economy got pretty weird and people were not buying high ticket coaching programs like they had been. Mm-hmm. So that company kind of went by the wayside, but I had found this other thing that I enjoyed just as much as playing music and maybe sometimes in the same way. Having conversations with people that make a difference is a gas. It's awesome. What a fortunate thing to be able to do. Not to mention that it keeps me growing. It keeps me on my path. So I just kept doing it. And once we had a child, I thought, maybe I should actually turn this into a real business instead of just, you know, kind of having a client now and again. And that's it. So now I focus my attention in, I guess, kind of four places mostly, which is coaching, music, and music's really just kind of coming back. I did stop for a while because of said pandemic.
Sure.
You know, family, that's a big one. I have a 10-year-old. So the one thing about having a life like this is that I get to be there for my kid. And that's huge.
It is for sure. For sure. I love the trajectory again, so much of what you said. Yes, that's exactly what, how I became a coach was one of my singing class students said, you know, I'd like to come over for a private lesson, only I don't want to sing. I just want to ask your advice and I want you to give it to me. And I went,
oh, that's the greatest thing ever. I swear, when I was a vocal coach, I mean, you know this. So if you're working on somebody as a singer, it's like 15% physical technique and 85% what's going on in your head.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it's a weird instrument. It's not a flute. It's not a piano. It's not a guitar. You can't see what you're doing. So it's all in your head.
Yeah.
And just getting someone to think differently makes them sing differently.
For sure.
And I loved that part. That was the part that really turned me on. You know, the rest of it, I was like, whatever. But I love that part.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is fascinating to me how, you know, it really cooks their noodle when you go, a lot of the singing stuff you're doing is actually outside your body. Just remember that. And what?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Super fun. So talk to me about your podcast, because I'm going to be very honest here. Again, I don't edit. So I said it one way and then I said it the other way. Because one time it says the subtle art of yelling, and then the other one, it says the subtle art of not yelling. So which is it? And talk to me about what it is.
It is the subtle art of not yelling.
Great. Awesome. And what drove you to starting a podcast? And also, what are you trying to sort of do with it?
Well, again, like so many people, I was stuck at home for a while. And I have always gotten clients by being out in the world and from referrals and just meeting people. And while I've coached a lot of online marketers and I've made many a disgustingly terrible foray into marketing myself online. And I know more about it than I want to sometimes. I stopped doing it. I just said, no, I'm not doing that. Well, then I was stuck in my house and I couldn't go out and I couldn't talk to people. So it was time to kind of go back. And I met my now podcast partner, Miles Hansen, who at least at one time, I think he's changing this, called himself a marketer. Mm-hmm. And we had this wonderful conversation where we realized that we are very alike in certain ways. And we had all the same issues with the way that marketing is presented. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the tactics and techniques that are touted as the way. And at the same time, I'd realized that if you're going to put yourself out in the world, on the internet, you have to have some kind of what they call content. And I've played around with lots of different things, but I didn't really like doing any of it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel particularly good at it until I discovered that the best thing I do is this, is talk and talk to people. And I'd said earlier, I played around on Clubhouse, which is one of the ways I kind of started discovering that. And I thought to myself, self, maybe it's a podcast. Maybe that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. But I don't like doing stuff by myself. So I was in a conversation with Miles and he said, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. And I said, me too. Let's do it together.
Perfect. I love it.
And where we got to is that while all of the marketing courses out there, they all have useful information. But at some point, those tactics and techniques just don't work for everyone. They mm-hmm. just don't. Particularly if you are maybe a more naturally introverted person. Maybe if you don't want to jump up and down and be the loudest person in the room, you know, if that doesn't fit you, then you have to do something else. You have to find a way to grow and run a business and thrive inside of what you're doing without having to be the loudest person in the room. So that's sort of the exploration of our podcast. And we talk to creatives like musicians and people like that. And we talk to marketers and writers and all kinds of folks. And then we also just have a rambling conversation with ourselves about whatever we're thinking about.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah, I'm going to ask you now for how do people find you? Because I'm going to need to obviously subscribe to The Subtle Art of Not Yelling. But if somebody wants to work with you or somebody wants to find you, what are the best ways to do that?
The best way is just go to artistmind.co. Or if you're a big Instagram person, you can find me at mindartcoach.
Cool. And I will absolutely be putting that stuff into the show notes because people learn differently, as we know. Some need to hear it. Some like to read it. So it'll be all that information will also be in the show notes so that you can get a hold of Bill and see the kind of work that he's doing to help you unlock your creative mindset, which is awesome. Bill, I'm so glad that you were able to take the time to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a ball. I love doing this.
Oh, me too. I have just one last question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and it's a silly little question, but I find that it can yield some profound results. And the question is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Oh man, I have two different phrases fighting in my head.
Okay, so you've got two planes. Go for it.
One is be here now. And the other plane is writing, let love rule.
Both brilliant. Both brilliant. I love it. I love it. I love it. Ah, Bill, thank you so much. Again, don't go away because we're going to record the little bonus episode in just a minute. But I wanted to say thank you once again. And I am Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast, reminding you, if you're listening to this, that you can always reach out to me. You can find Bill if you want to see more about what he's doing. But if you want to reach out to me, you know how to find me. All of the links are on the show notes. And I remind you to be bold, be creative, and of course, most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.